Grab your favorite caffeinated beverage and get cozy because you are listening to Mindful as a Mother with Paige Bruce and Lindsay Adams.
Do you remember those toys from when we were kids where you would fit the different shaped pegs into the different shaped holes?
Yeah.
That's a lot like parenting, except when you have a neurodivergent child, using traditional parenting techniques is like trying to put the round peg in the star hole.
That's exactly how I felt when I discovered that Sam was neurodivergent. I knew that traditional parenting techniques and even the approaches that I was taught in grad school, they didn't feel right in my soul to like supporting who he was as a human. And they also just weren't effective. And that's when I discovered the power of responsive parenting.
Exactly. So if you are like us and are interested in tailoring responsive parenting techniques to your neurodivergent world, check out our Parenting Your NeuroSpicy video series. You can find it in our Stand store at the link in the show notes.
This podcast is not intended to be a substitute for therapy or the therapeutic relationship. And the information given in this podcast is purely for educational purposes and is not intended to replace the advice of a professional.
Hello and welcome back to Mindful as a Mother. Today we have a very special interview. I'm here with Paige, of course. She barely has a voice from her laryngitis that's been going on for what feels like a month.
Yeah.
But today we have Gina Prosh with us, and she is an amazing author, and we cannot wait to talk to her about her book and all of the amazing things that she does. Say hi, Gina.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yes, we're so excited to have you on here. So have won awards for your books in the past, but you have an upcoming book called Hope More Than Wishful Thinking, correct?
Right. It just came out last week.
Oh, that's amazing. So it's like brand new.
Yes.
Yeah, March 11th, right?
Yep, that was the date.
Awesome. It's always probably so rewarding. I've never written a book, but we've talked to lots of authors, and it's a long process. So when it's finally launched, I'm sure I'm so relieved.
Yeah, they call it, you know, this is my book baby. It is your book baby. Same thing.
You devote all your time to it.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do, and how you got inspired to writing children's books.
Well, I started out in academics as an English teacher. And so I've taught English and writing for many, many years. It's been a consistent thing in my life. But I've also done writing. I've done comic strips, comic books. I've written scads and scads of nonfiction articles and pieces over the years. So I had done a book and journal that go together that were based on a Facebook platform that I ran for 10 years called This Day's Joy. And so from there, I thought, you know, this is great for adults, but it would be really, really good for kids. And so it was just after the whole pandemic thing set in 2021, I connected with Boys Town with the first book, which is Joy, You Find What You Look For. And I then pitched them the idea of a series. And so the second book, Hope More Than Wishful Thinking, is the second book in that Holly's Choice series.
I love that. What was your inspiration behind this particular pitch? This topic?
You know, I think that in our modern world, that we really need to take a big bunch of responsibility in our own positive thinking and our own positive emotions. And so the world just doesn't, you know, seem to supply hearts and flowers and bunny rabbits, you know, day. And so that has been something that I have seen in my own life, that the more I am positive and focused on those things, the better things seem to go. And so I started with the Joy book, and I got to the Hope book because I really do think that so often we as people just want to be able to sit at home, cross our fingers, hope for the best and then really complain if it doesn't work out. But if you want those good things to happen, if you want that hope to have good fruit, you've got to go out and do something to make that happen. And so I wanted a way that kids could relate to, because the sooner you can start to build those good habits in young kids, the better off you are.
Paige, you're still muted.
Oh, shoot. I was going off. Okay, so
I'll edit it out. It's fine.
I love that, because we often talk about neurodivergence, right? Our entire platform is around supporting neurodivergent parents and children thrive in this world that was built actually for neurodiversity, but isn't always accepted. And we talk about how children are so aware, they're so self-aware, that when something feels off in their peer group or in a social setting, they start to assign labels to themselves, these oftentimes really negative self-deprecating beliefs. And I always appreciate children's books specifically about this, because we really, between the ages of like birth and seven, are developing our inner voice, our inner critic. And so if we can build on the resiliency and fill in those gaps with positive, hopeful thinking, growth mindset, right? Then a lot of us now that Lindsay and I have spoken on before in earlier podcasts wouldn't have these self-deprecating ideas of like, oh, I'm just lazy. Oh, I'm manipulative. Oh, I just can't do it. Oh, I'm not good enough. And so I really appreciate the concept of these books in general as like a growth mindset, kind of fill it in for some of these kids at that age.
Right. It is about the fact that you've got to have a sense of agency. And obviously kids can't have agency on everything, or, you know, they'd eat Cheez-Its and, you know, drink Mountain Dew 24/7 or something like that. But they can have agency in these sorts of things. And the more you help them kind of start to understand the world and how they can affect positive change in their world for themselves, I think it's great. You know, like think about when you've got a little toddler and they're just starting to learn how to walk, and the kind of cheerleading that every parent does. You know, you put them a little bit outside of range of their favorite toy. You put them a little bit beyond hand's reach to you, and you encourage them to take that step to go get that thing. And I think that it's a shame that we lose that sense of engaging with their inner toddler as they get older. You know, keep putting those things just outside their grasp so that they can achieve them, and they see that they can do things. And you know, when they're toddlers, you don't just say, oh, you fell down, I guess you're never going to be able to walk. You're like, you can do it. And we need to continue with that sort of mindset throughout, particularly, like you say, this 0 to 7, but then on through that middle school tween age and on into high school, college, and whatnot.
And especially because we mainly work with children and parents who are neurodivergent, I think it's so easy when something's hard or difficult to just say, oh, well, I can't do it because my ADHD or my autism or things like that. And that's not actually the case. It's we need to find a way to do it that works for your brain. We need to adjust. And so a growth mindset is so important for everybody, but especially for the people listening to this podcast.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I do groups in schools here where I live, and I have this really rowdy bunch of like middle school boys, right? That tween, early teen age. And oftentimes I'm hearing like, well, it's the ADHD. It's the ADHD. It's my ADHD. I'm like, I also have ADHD. And we can learn to be successful. It's just about what skills are going to support you in this moment. I was like, so if it's not working that way, I was like, then we got to figure out a new way to do it.
Well, and that way is going to be unique to that particular person. It's what is right for that individual in working through that particular situation.
I totally agree. And I feel like half the battle is figuring out what's right for your child in that particular situation. And then the other half the battle is encouraging them to try it. What tips do you have, or how can we teach our children to be more active in their positive emotions?
I think that one of the big things that we as parents need to do is model that behavior for them. There was a time when my son was little, and okay, so we were driving across town and somebody pulls out in front of you in traffic and you draw your attention to it because it's like, oh, you just about had a car wreck or something. And I said, you know, oh, that guy's a real dude, you know, that's doing this. And for a couple of weeks, it was like, who's the dude? And it was this game that we would play. But I realized we're looking for bad things to happen. You know, it's like you walk into Target and you're looking for something terrible to happen. Who's going to cut me off on the way to the checkout? Who's going to, you know, you can just as easily flip that narrative and start to look for all of the people who, hey, look at that person. They're on crutches, but they still took their cart back and put it in the cart return. Isn't that really terrific that they took that initiative? Hey, we got a really great response from a teacher or a something like that. I got a promotion today at work. The more you start to draw attention to these good things that are happening in life, you can then backtrack on that. I got this really great promotion, or I got this really great letter, but you know what? The reason I got that is, remember, I had to do this, this, and this 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, and this was my payoff. So that they start to make those connections, that these things aren't just spontaneous, magical things that happen, but they're things that came as the result of work for you. And so perhaps those same things are going to be the result of work for them. If they had a C in a particular class and they get up to a B minus, celebrate the B minus, because look at the progress you've made. Now you're at a B minus. What can we do to see if you could get to a B or a B plus, maybe an A by the end of the semester? So you look at those steps that they're taking and really draw their attention to them so that they can see their own agency, see that they did it.
Agreed. I totally think that is such an important part of how we do it. And when you were talking, it reminded me of how the brain really develops new habits, new skills. It's like, it is really easy to get caught in this like negative, everything's so humbrum, like mindset. Mm-hmm. But that's the thing we're practicing. And I often talk to people, I'm like, the reason affirmations or the reason like gratitude things work and are effective is because we are rewiring, making new connections in our brain. So even though it feels hard to notice it, once we start noticing it, we'll notice it more. And then we're reinforcing that. And it really takes a minute. I would say 6 to 8 weeks minimum to like really get in there and really try it. And the other day, actually, my kids are always throwing shade at me, which means they're always insulting me. Like it's always a backhanded comment on accident because they're young. So I was talking to my 9-year-old and she said, she's writing her own book right now. She wants to be an author. So she's writing a book. She's like, I can't draw a horse. And I said, yet. It's like, you can't draw a horse yet. And then she looks at me and she says, I'm too old for Gabby's dollhouse. And I was like, wait a minute, what are you talking about? And I guess there's the whole episode on Gabby's dollhouse where they really lean into the word yet. Like, I can't do it yet, or I haven't seen it yet, or I'm not there yet. And I was like, okay, but also your mom is a mental health counselor and she's been saying this to you for so many years, but like, I love that Gabby's dollhouse gets credit for that.
Absolutely. I always like to ask kids, or the adults that I work with, you know, it's like, add a but. What is that negative comment that you just made? You know, my refrigerator just broke, but I noticed that it was broken before everything that was in the refrigerator spoiled. So I was able to get stuff in coolers and save, you know, all of my groceries. Or I got stopped by a patrolman on the way to town, but I got off with a warning instead of a ticket. Yay for me. And, you know, thank the officer for not giving me that ticket today. what are some of those negative things? Yeah, I fell down the steps, and yeah, I might have injured my pride, but I didn't get a broken leg. I didn't sprain my ankle, all of those kinds of things. So when you start to add that but or add that yet, like you were just talking about, it really does change the way you can frame these situations. And that's one of the things that happens in the Joy You Find What You Look For book. You know, what are you looking for?
Yes. With this idea of but, I just hear it resonating of like the concept that's really popular right now called toxic positivity. So what would you say? Do you know what that concept is right now? That's very popular.
I've heard the term, but if you give me a breakdown, that'd be great.
Totally. So toxic positivity is this idea that you're so positive regardless to everything that's going on that it's invalidating pretty much to yourself and the people around you. That's just like a one way to wrap it up. And so when we're saying, I got pulled over, but what would you say is the main difference in the concepts that you're trying to communicate versus this idea of toxic positivity? Like, how can we draw a line between those for our audience of like, hey, we're not teaching you these skills to invalidate you or your children. We're teaching you these skills so you feel like more functional and joyful in life.
Right. For me, it's about reminding myself what the majority of the day is in a lot of cases. If you're living life for any amount of time, you're going to have really, really, really bad days. I mean, bad days where bad things happen. But if you can remind yourself that even on that very worst of days, not everything was bad. There was one tiny moment that really didn't quite suck so bad, you know? It doesn't make the whole day better, but it means that it was not 100% bad. And it's, you know, I think that's one of the things that people have resonated with my books is that the character of Mom does not come in and tell Holly, you're wrong not to be joyful. She has a lot of empathy for where she is. She just asks her questions like, do you think you might have missed something that would have been good during the day? You know, do you think that you might be looking for things that are not, you know? So by sitting with her daughter and allowing her daughter to feel those negative emotions and then saying, okay, you've got that negative. Is there anything else that's going on too? It's like, it's the but and the yet, you know, but there are other things that are going on as well.
Yeah, I think too, some of our audience might resonate with the idea of the glimmers that's going around right now. It's like, find the glimmers in your day. And when I'm in a session, I often call them the golden threads. So in every situation that we're in that is trying or challenging, there's also golden threads. And if you can find the golden thread that's weaved throughout that experience, like what you're taking away from it, how this is going to move you forward, then you will be able to build the resiliency to continue to make it through.
Exactly. Because those golden threads, those positive things are there. You know, it's, I remember, Illusions, Adventures of a Reluctant Messiah. Was the first place that I heard this, but that there's no problem that doesn't also come with a gift in its hands. And so how, you know, yes, the problem is there, but what is the takeaway? What's the thing that I can gain from experiencing this problem, working through this problem? Problems don't exist without solutions. So what can this be? You know, what could my takeaway be? And I love this idea of a golden thread. That's great.
Well, and I think it's so hard sometimes in the society that we live, strike the balance between because they're saying like no toxic positivity, but there's also on the flip side of that, you don't want to validate negative, stay in the negative for so long that you're not moving forward. So I love that there's this sweet spot in the middle where we can acknowledge that this was really hard and we have maybe some good in it, or we learn something from it, or we'll know what to do differently next time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So with that, I would love to talk about maybe some, we did a couple with the butt and using the books actually, but some strategies that parents can start using ASAP to maybe start incorporating some of these ideas into their parenting.
So one of the things that I think helps create not only just a bond between parents and kids, but a good ground space for developing these ideas is that idea that you're going to really focus on what you can control and what you can't control. Because you can't control the weather, but you can control the clothes that you wear when you're out in the weather. And so the more you focus on what you have charge of in your own life, I think the easier it becomes to move forward. So for instance, you know, if you have an outing scheduled for the zoo and it's pouring down rain or something like that, the options become, we can carry umbrellas and wear our raincoats and splash in puddles and go to the zoo and see what animals do when it's raining outside. And it will be really, really not crowded at the zoo today because everybody else is going to stay home. And so we're going to have a better chance to see stuff. Or we have a great plan B that we always have for any outdoor activity, you know. So when you start to look at what you're in charge of, what you're not in charge of, I think that that's really, really helpful. I think being an active model of perseverance is huge. My son and I, we were always out in the garden together, and I don't do vegetable gardening. I do flower gardening, and I'm not a particularly gifted gardener. You know, I have no great skills. I forget to water stuff. It dies, you know, all of those kinds of things. But in doing those things together, we didn't just quit gardening the first year because everything that I bought at the home garden center, like, turned into this sad little bunch of dried up stumps. You know, we looked at, well, this plant does better when mom forgets to water it than this plant does. You know, this plant is a more forgiving plant than this plant is. And so the next year we continued on with that. You know, work on those perseverance skills. Do something that you're bad at as a parent. Do something that you're really bad at. If you are a terrible artist, go take a painting class, take your kids with you to that painting class and let them see that you can have fun doing something, even if you're not really great at it. Because those kinds of things are just part of life. And if we only ever do the things that we're good at, our life gets very small, very fast. And those are a couple of things. You know, another thing is, like I said, when you're out and about, to look for things that are really good and really positive and really hopeful. Draw your attention to times that, see, you did this hard work and then this good thing happened. Maybe right now, if you do some more hard work, another good thing will happen. And if it doesn't happen tomorrow, it might happen next week or the week after that.
I love that. I love the modeling something you're bad at. I'm going to have to find some things to do with my kids that I'm bad at.
I'm bad at a lot of stuff. My kids hate it because they'll ask me questions and I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, I don't know that. One thing that I love to do, and sometimes I recommend, is a good things jar, is what we call it.
And I've got a joy jar. Yep.
So when we have family dinner or a point throughout the day where we each take the time and find, like, what were the good things? Like, what was something good that happened today, right? And then my favorite part is that they have the opportunity to write it down and stick it in the jar. And then once a month or whenever we actually remember, because that's more realistic for my life, we can pull them out and talk about, like, oh yeah, I remember when this happened. I remember when that happened. And that's something too, I think our audience would be able to walk away with and start like a tangible way to start building these skills.
Yes. Yes. We keep a joy jar. I've done the This Day's Joy book, the adult book has the companion journal, Finding This Day's Joy. You know, write something down every day and start thinking of ways that you can interpret that. What, you know, at dinner, what's something that you wish that you would have known this morning that you know tonight? And what did, you know, how did you learn that? You know, where did that information come from? What are things like that? You know, what did you smell today that was really, really good? What did you hear something that was really neat? A favorite song on the radio or whatever. So the more of those kinds of teasers that you can give to people, it's like, if somebody asked me, you know, like, how did you get started this? You know, oh, you asked me a question and test anxiety, you know, I don't know. It's just my life. I can't tell you how it happened. You know, but if somebody asks a question that's tied to a specific, well, then maybe it's easier to answer. And it gives me something to pull on.
Yeah, absolutely. I often use that one. Like, this feels hard, or I can't do this. So it's like, when's another time you did something that felt hard? What helped you do that thing? And then we talk about how we can use that same skill that helped us do that hard thing for this hard thing. And we can see how it turns out.
Yeah. I love documentaries, actually. And watching documentaries and reading nonfiction, like, you know, Ernest Shackleton and the whole endurance stuff, the boys in the boat, all these kinds of wonderful stories that are about overcoming adversity and not letting what seems to be a horrible situation be a horrible situation. I mean, the Shackleton expedition to Antarctica is incredibly inspiring. When you share those stories with young kids, they're just like, oh my gosh, this really happened. This is a real story. Yeah, this is a real story. These things really happened. And there really wasn't anything super special about this guy other than he decided that he wasn't just going to stay stuck in the ice and wait to die. And so he led his crew. Everybody survives. It's a great story. And there are great stories like that all around in the world. Nonfiction is an amazing, amazing thing to spend time reading.
What is that rock climbing story? Do you know what I'm talking about? Or like, it's another like really good one. It's a survival story. I don't know if it's rock climbing or hiking or something like that, but it's like two guys who go hiking together and something happens and one of them ends up getting hurt and they get stuck, and it's a whole story. I'll find it and link it in the show notes about how they get through that struggle. And it's just amazing.
Yeah. And kids really, I think they benefit from these kinds of stories of people overcoming adversity, because these are real life stories. These are not fiction. I mean, I love the Marvel movies, but none of that's really going to happen. You know, Thanos isn't coming to the world and we have to, you know, stop all of that. But these other stories, these are things that really have happened to people. And what did they do to try and keep moving forward?
Absolutely. Social stories are so powerful as far as like modeling for ourselves and our kids. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much for coming on today. Tell us where we can find you, where we can get the book, if you have any promos going, anything like that.
You can find me online at ginaprosch.com. That's ginaprosch.com. And there I've got links to all of the socials. I'm on Facebook and I run a Substack and I've got an Instagram account and, you know, all those different things. My books are available. The two kids books are available at Boys Town Press and Amazon. My independent books, This Day's Joy and Finding This Day's Joy, the adult books, those are available Amazon, Barnes and Noble, that sort of that sort of place. So you can find them all online. And there are links on my website too.
Perfect. And in the show notes, I did link those on our Amazon storefront. I did both books in the Holly's Choice series. So I did Joy, You Find What You Look For, which is the children's book one. And then I did Hope, More Than Wishful Thinking, which is the second book in that series. And then I also did the adult book, since we've mentioned them, of Finding This Day's Joy, A Year of Living Gratefully, and then the accompanying This Day's Joy Meditations for Finding Joy Every Day. So you guys can go to our show notes, and it says you can find Gina's books here, and click that link and you'll be able to pull up any of them.
Thank you so much. We've really enjoyed having you on and having you share all of your wonderful tips for helping our children increase the amount of positive emotion in their life and embrace a growth mindset.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been a fun day talking to both of you.
Thanks for coming to Mindful as a Mother podcast. If you'd like more of us and Mindful as a Mother, you can find Paige at Instagram at Parenting with Paige and Lindsay at Linz_AdamsLCSW. Find us on TikTok, Instagram, and in our Facebook group, Creating Community and Smashing Parental Stigma, Embracing Mindful Motherhood and Positive Parenting. Thanks so much, and see you next time.